Welcome to this week's episode of the My Mysterious Bible Podcast, the podcast where, when it comes to the Bible, if it's mysterious, it matters. I am Michael Norton, and I will once again be your host. This episode will explore the bizarre account where Ezekiel lies on each of his sides for extended periods. Let's begin with some background information about the book of Ezekiel from the Faith Life Study Bible. Ezekiel, a prophet and a priest, was exiled to Babylon in 597 BC. His ministry extended over at least a 23-year period. The book opens with his first dramatic vision of the likeness of the Lord himself. Ezekiel was keenly aware of God's presence and power in human affairs. He addressed both the exiles and the people left in Judah with messages of warning and judgment, predicting the fall of Jerusalem. After Jerusalem's fall in 586 BC, Ezekiel prophesied hope and reassurance for the people of Judah, who had lost the focus of God's covenant. And they had also lost the temple in Jerusalem. His vision of the Valley of Dry Bones in chapter 37 is a classic picture of God's ability to renew his people. Okay, we're going to go ahead and read from Ezekiel chapter 4, beginning in verse 4. "And you, son of man, take a brick and lay it before you and engrave on it a city, even Jerusalem, and put siege works against it and build a siege wall against it and cast up a mound against it. Set camps also against it, and plant battering rams against it all around. And you take an iron griddle and place it as an iron wall between you and the city, and set your face toward it, and let it be in a state of siege, and press the siege against it. This is a sign for the house of Israel. Then lie on your left side, and place the punishment of the house of Israel upon it. For the number of the days that you lie on it, you shall bear their punishment. For I assign to you a number of days, 390 days, equal to the number of years of their punishment. So long shall you bear the punishment of the house of Israel. And when you have completed these, you shall lie down a second time, but on your right side, and bear the punishment of the house of Judah. 40 days I assign you, a day for each year, and you shall set your face toward the siege of Jerusalem with your arm bared, and you shall prophesy against the city. And behold, I will place cords upon you so that you cannot turn from one side to the other till you have completed the days of your siege. And you take wheat and barley, beans and lentils, millet and emmer, and put them in a single vessel and make your bread from them. During the number of the days that you eat shall be by weight, 20 shekels a day. From day to day you shall eat, and water you shall drink by measure, the sixth of a hin. From day to day you shall drink, and you shall eat it as a barley cake, baking it in their sight on human dung." And just in case you don't know, that means poop, human poop. Verse 13, "And the Lord said, thus shall the people of Israel eat their bread unclean among the nations where I will drive them. Verse 14, "Then I said, ah, Lord God, behold, I have never defiled myself. From my youth up till now, I have never eaten what died of itself or was torn by beast, nor has tainted meat come into my mouth. Then he said to me, see, I assign to you cow's dung instead of human dung, on which you may prepare your bread. Moreover, he said to me, son of man, behold, I will break the supply of bread in Jerusalem. They shall eat bread by weight and with anxiety. And they shall drink water by measure and in dismay. I will do this that they may lack bread and water and look at one another in dismay and rot away because of their punishment." Okay, and that was from the English Standard Version. This week, we're going to focus on the strange instructions from God to Ezekiel, instructing him to create a representation of Israel on a brick, and then act out a siege against it for 390 days, and then turn on his other side and oppose the southern kingdom of Judah for 40 days. Now, in this particular episode, I am not going to go into the interpretation of this act, but we're going to deal on what type of act it is. What is the point of Ezekiel lying on his side, acting out sieges against Israel and Judah for a total of 430 days? These are sign acts, nonverbal prophecies. We will now turn to an excellent article on sign acts found on the Bible Project website. Sign acts, the weird, wonderful world of prophetic communication. Visual aids for an ancient audience by Whitney Willard, September 12, 2018. And I'm going to be reading this kind of lengthy article, but it's very good. I'm just going to say right now that sign acts are non-verbal prophecies that in which the prophet does something that the people should understand. The way this one's laid out, in particular, though, it would have been difficult to understand, but let's go ahead and go into this article. And I quote, "If you've ever read the prophets, you know they seem a little weird. Sure, there's cherished passages like God's promise to give his people a future and a hope in Jeremiah 29:11, or a new heart and a new spirit in Ezekiel 36:26. But on the way to these beloved texts, you come across strange scenes like Jeremiah smashing jars before an audience and Ezekiel baking bread over human waste, and in parentheses, yes, poop. There's also that episode in Isaiah, walking around naked for 3 years. Weird, right? Well, yes and no. Yes, the prophetic actions are weird in the sense that it's rare to see a man walking around naked unless you live in Portland, Oregon, like me. Then it's not so rare, and that's the author of the article speaking, not me. But no, they're not weird in that they're random or meaningless. The prophets were communicators, and like all great human communicators, they utilized a wide range of verbal and nonverbal elements in their prophetic speeches. They didn't merely speak out prophecies, they acted them out as well. Unfortunately, the nonverbal components don't get much press today, so we often mistake these sign acts as yet another prophetic oddity, when in fact they're a key ingredient in the compelling multi-sensory presentations that fill the prophetic pages. This means that if we want to understand the weird, wonderful world of prophetic communication, we need to understand these sign acts. Now I know what you're thinking. What is a sign act? Good question. Sign acts are nonverbal actions and objects intentionally employed by the prophets so that the message's content was communicated through them to the audience. And that's from the Free Bull Dictionary of Old Testament Prophets. Think of them as visual aids. Who doesn't love a good visual aid? Whether it's in the classroom, the sanctuary, or on YouTube, visuals make instructions concrete in our own minds, and they reinforce it in a way that we can remember. In the same way, sign acts were nonverbal actions that visually demonstrated and drove home the message being delivered by prophets. What makes these visuals so interesting, i.e. weird, is that the prophet himself was intimately involved in the visual. He might use coordinated body movements, grand gestures, facial expressions, or complex actions with objects to make the divine point. Imagine the game of charades on steroids. Ezekiel, a prophet whose sanity is often questioned, is the most notable example of this. Just a few of his enacted prophecies include lying bound in ropes. That's chapter 4, 1 through 8, shaving his head and striking some of the hair with a sword. Chapter 5, 1 and 2, covering his face and digging through a wall. Chapter 12, 3 through 7, trembling. Chapter 12, verse 18, and avoiding the full mourning rituals for his dead wife. Chapter 24, 16 through 24. And then she took that from John McGregor in the New Bible Commentary. Okay, that does seem weird. But the strangeness of his actions that, pardon me, but it is the strangeness of his actions that drew the audience to his message, which is exactly what he wanted. The visual nature of the prophet's presentation made his message unmistakably clear to a people who were notorious for muddying up the waters of God's word. The Israelites could choose to ignore the prophet's words, but they sure couldn't miss them. Thus, the power of the sign act. Pretty cool, right? Now that we know what they are, we need to figure out how to spot one. How do we spot a sign act? Let's start with what a sign act is not. The non-communication activities of the prophets, such as traveling to a location to deliver a message or writing down a message on a scroll, are not sign acts, nor are they the activities that happen within a vision or the rhetorical commands that aren't meant to be carried out. Sign acts also are not the same thing as signs and symbols, such as in signs and wonders. In Hebrew, signs and wonders refers to miraculous events intended to be passed down and remembered from one generation to another. Think of the parting of the Red Sea. Prophets can indeed perform signs, such as Elijah raising a woman's son from the dead in 1 Kings 17, but that is not a sign act. It's a sign or miracle. So how do we know when we've come across a sign act? First, it is always communicated in a distinct literary form involving two primary components: the divine command to the prophet to perform the specified action and the interpretation of the sign act. There's the action carried out and the interpretation of the action. You can't have one without the other. Imagine how easily actions could be misinterpreted if there was no explanation. Like maybe Isaiah just liked being in the buff, or Ezekiel wasn't so fond of his wife. Obviously, we need the interpretation. So when you see nonverbal activity coupled with verbal proclamation, you know you have a sign act. Here's an example from Jeremiah 13, 1 through 10. The nonverbal activity. Jeremiah buys, wears, and buries a new waist sash, and then digs it up to discover that it's ruined, no longer good for anything, in Jeremiah 13, 1 through 7. The verbal proclamation is this: Then the word of the Lord came to me. Thus says the Lord, even so will I spoil the pride of Judah and the great pride of Jerusalem. This evil people who refuse to hear my words, who stubbornly follow their own heart and have gone after other gods to serve them and worship them, shall be like this loincloth, which is good for nothing. And that's from Jeremiah chapter 13, 8 through 10. Another way to spot a sign act is to look for the description of the performance. Many biblical accounts detail the prophet acting out the command, the presence of the eyewitnesses watching him, the responses of the witnesses, and a declaration that the event will surely come to pass. A drama this elaborate carried out in public to make a persuasive point can only mean one thing: you've stumbled upon a sign act. One of the best examples is the profoundly detailed performance that Ezekiel puts on in Ezekiel 4 through 5, involving multiple sign acts and meanings to communicate Jerusalem's siege and captivity. If there's a sign act of all sign acts, I'd say Ezekiel 4 and 5 is a one. You might want to read it and observe his performance. it would be great practice on how to spot a sign act. A third way to recognize a sign act is to look for the use of similes, which are comparisons using like or as. Often the action and the interpretation of the action are connected through the use of simile, where the prophet takes on the role of God or of God's people to draw a comparison and make the divine point. So when you come across the phrase, just as the prophet has done, so it will slash has slash should be done, it is like a flashing light telling you that you're reading a sign act. Here are two examples from Isaiah and Ezekiel. So, action. Isaiah walks around naked and barefoot for 3 years in Isaiah chapter 20, verse 2. The interpretation. Then the Lord said, as my servant Isaiah has walked naked and barefoot for 3 years as a sign and a portent against Egypt and Cush, so shall the king of Assyria lead away the Egyptian captives and the Cushite exiles, both the young and the old, naked and barefoot, with buttocks uncovered and nakedness of Egypt. And that's from Isaiah chapter 20, verses 3 through 4. So Isaiah 20, 3 through 4. The action, Ezekiel packs a bag for exile, digs a hole in the wall of his home, covers his eyes as he exits through the hole and leaves the city. Ezekiel 12, 3 through 6. The interpretation. Say, I am a sign for you. As I have done, so shall it be done to them. They shall go into exile, into captivity, and the prince who is among them shall lift his baggage upon his shoulder at dusk, and shall go out. They shall dig through the wall to bring him out through it. He shall cover his face, that he may not see the land with his eyes. Ezekiel 12, 11 and 12. Are you getting the feel of how to spot a sign act? If you want more, check out some of the classic examples of sign acts in Jeremiah 27 and 32 or Ezekiel 12 and 21. And if we haven't geeked out enough yet for my Bible nerds, let us consider one last question. How do we interpret a sign act? This is an interesting question because various schools of thought have emerged over the years. Some people believe that the prophet's performance set his depicted actions in motion to such an extent that the actions inevitably occurred. In layman's terms, a sign act caused the events. On the other hand, some understand the sign acts to express divine reality rather than the cause of it, relegating the actions to secondary importance to such an extreme that whether or not the action was actually performed is of little significance. Still others see them as acts of power, legitimizing the prophet's authority on or street theater intended to persuade their audiences through dramatic performances. So which is it? Is it A, B, C, D, or all of the above? There are legitimate elements in all of the interpretations. Often, the sign acts did predict future events, express reality of the divine will, and legitimize the prophet's words. In acts as dramatic as street theater, however, we should not narrow the purpose and function of the sign acts to a single school of thought just to fit them neatly into one interpretive box. It's better to interpret them broadly as rhetorical nonverbal communication that accompanied the verbal elements of the prophetic message in order to persuade the audience of the divine word being communicated. The action could definitely predict the future, but it could also serve as an indictment of the past or as a convicting warning of the present. Pardon me. We don't need to limit it to predictive prophecy, and obviously the sign acts express the divine will, but that's no reason to minimize the actions themselves. After all, they were the vehicle through which the divine will was communicated. As to the acts of power and street theater positions, the sign acts were less concerned with establishing the identity of the prophet or gaining the public's attention as they are communicating a specific message. Does this make sense? We want to leave our interpretation of sign acts broad enough to allow each sign act to speak for itself in the context in which it is recorded and in the manner in which it was carried out. Happy reading. With that information tucked away, I'd like to welcome you to the weird, wonderful world of prophetic communication. Sure, it's unconventional and a bit strange, but sometimes people need something strange to shock them into hearing a message they'd rather not hear. And that's exactly what the prophets did for their audiences through Synax. So next time you're tempted to believe Ezekiel has lost his mind, remember that he's brilliant. He is a brilliant communicator and likely the most sane person in the book that bears his name. And that is the end of the article. And this should give you a very clear idea of what a sign act is and how to recognize one when you come across it in the Bible. And that will conclude this week's episode. If you were not familiar with sign acts, I hope this has given you a pretty good idea of what they are and how to recognize them and what they're used for. And if you were familiar with them, maybe took you a little deeper into it. And with that, we will see you next time. Have a blessed week.